under transient flow conditions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the introduction. Today I'm going to talk about colloid and contaminant transport migration in Widow's zone sediments. This work is largely motivated by the recognized potential of mineral colloids to facilitate the transport of Widow's zone contaminants. In the Widow's zone, Widow's zone colloids such as clay particles have high affinity for many contaminants. If those colloids themselves are mobile, then they will be able to facilitate them. They will be able to enhance the mobility of these adsorbed contaminants. And this colloid effect has been observed for a variety of contaminants, including radionuclides, transition metals, as well as toxic organics such as herbicides. A unique feature of the Widow's zone is transient flow. Transient flow occurs during rainfall or irrigation events and is characterized by temporal variations in soil moisture content and pore water flow velocity. Although colloid facilitated transport in water saturated systems under steady flow conditions is well documented, what is unknown is the factors that control colloid and contaminant mobilization and transport in the Widow's zone. So the objective of this work is to identify the factors that influence the mobility of contaminants and colloids during transient and saturated flow. To accomplish this objective, we measured the mobilization of in situ colloids and contaminants during drainage and imbibition of laboratory columns packed with natural sediments. Here is the column used in our experiments. The column is 20 centimeters long and 5 centimeters in diameter. The column is packed with cesium-137 contaminated Hanford coarse sand. The Hanford coarse sand is obtained from the Department of Energy Hanford site in Washington State. And the cesium-137 is a radionuclide, and it is a Department of Energy priority contaminant. This packed column here is used to mimic a portion of the contaminated Widow's zone. To simulate the effects of rainfall, the peristaltic pumps were connected to the inlet and the outlet of the column. These pumps are used to provide the column with artificial rainwater and also to control the water flow inside the column. Drainage and imbibition are induced by adjusting the flow rate of those two pumps. This sand column is instrumented at three locations with tensiometers to measure the capillary pressure during the experiment. Those measured capillary pressure can be used to calculate soil moisture content in the column. The effluent from the base of the column is collected by a fraction collector for analysis of colloid and cesium-137 concentration. The influent solution used in my experiments is colloid-free and cesium-free. The pH is buffered at 7.4, and the ionic strength of this solution is adjusted by adding sodium chloride. A range of ionic strength is used in my experiments to examine its effect on colloid and cesium mobilization and transport. Here are the experimental results. Those two figures show the hydrological measurement made during the experiment. The upper panel shows the inflow rate and outflow rate during the experiment. And the lower panel shows the corresponding changes in soil moisture content at three locations in the column. We can see that the experiment can be divided into three stages. The first is drainage stage, and there are two imbibition stages followed. The drainage stage is used to mimic the transient flow conditions at the termination of rainfall. During the drainage stage, the inflow rate is lower than the outflow rate, so the moisture content in the column decreases, and a drying front moves downward in the column. Those two imbibition stages are used to mimic the transient flow conditions at the beginning of rainfall. And in the imbibition stages, the inflow rate is higher than the outflow rate, so the soil moisture content in the column increases, and a wetting front moves downward in the column. After each drainage or imbibition stage, the inflow rate and the outflow rate of the column are equalized. You can see here. So during this stage, there is no change in soil moisture content in the column, and the moisture content in the column is stable. This is to mimic the steady flow period during rainfall. Another thing I want to mention is that here I showed an experiment with three stages, one drainage and two imbibition. This is true for some of the experiments, but for the rest of the experiments, there is only one imbibition stage after the drainage stage. Okay, so here are the results showing the colloid and the cesium release in response to flow transients plotted as effluent cesium or colloid concentration versus cumulative effluent volume. Recall that the effluent is collected from the base of the column. So the cesium and the colloid in the effluent represents the cesium and the colloids that are mobilized and transported out of the column. We can see there are two stages in this experiment, one drainage stage and one imbibition stage. And in each drainage or imbibition event, we found high concentrations of cesium and colloids are mobilized from the column. We can see that at the beginning of a drainage or imbibition stage, there is a sharp increase in effluent colloid or cesium concentration, and the effluent concentration peaked shortly after the passage of a drying or wetting front. Then the concentration decreased sharply and reached to baseline levels when the inflow rate and the outflow rate of the column are equalized. So those results suggest that under steady state flow conditions, the mobilization of colloids and the cesium is very low. But when there is a flow transient, when there is a change in soil moisture content, we have high concentrations of cesium and colloids mobilized. Those open circles indicate dissolved cesium concentration in the effluent. We can see that during the whole course of the experiment, the dissolved cesium concentration is very low. It's almost zero. And this result demonstrate that the cesium mobilized from the column is mainly in colloid-associated form. So from this, we can conclude that the colloids from in the Hanford quicksand, they are capable of binding cesium, and those colloids, when they are mobilized during drainage and imbibition, they are capable of facilitating the mobilization and the transport of cesium. The mobilization of colloids and the cesium is sensitive to influent ionic strength. This second panel here shows the colloid and shows the effluent colloid and the cesium concentration in the effluent at a slightly higher ionic strength. We can see that the pattern of colloid and the cesium release is similar to that at a lower ionic strength. However, the effluent concentration of cesium and the colloids are lower than that at a lower ionic strength. And when we test this at a further higher ionic strength of 50 millimole, we can see that there is further decrease in effluent cesium and the colloid concentration. This figure summarizes the total quantity of colloid released at each of these above ionic strengths. We can see that during both drainage and imbibition, we can see that the quantity of colloid released from the column decreases significantly with increase in pore water in influent ionic strengths. This result can be explained by the change in the electrical double layer forces between the colloids and the surface grain. At a lower ionic strength, in our experimental conditions, both the colloids and the surface grain are negatively charged. And at a lower ionic strength, the repulsive electrical double layer forces between the colloids and the surface grain is high. So the effect is that the net attractive force between the colloid particles and the grain surface is low. So the mobility of the colloids is high at a lower ionic strength. However, when the ionic strength of the influent increases, the repulsive forces between the colloid particles and the grain surface became lower, and the net effect is that the net attractive forces between the colloids and the surface increased. So at those conditions, the colloids are difficult to be mobilized. This figure shows the quantity of the cesium and quantity and the speciation of the cesium released at those ionic strengths. We can see that the total amount of cesium released decreases with increasing in ionic strength. In addition, we also found that the speciation of cesium released from the column change with ionic strength. At a lower ionic strength, we have a very high fraction of the cesium that is released in colloid-associated form. However, at a high ionic strength, the majority of the cesium released from the column is in dissolved form. So this is the result of the competition of sodium ion for solid surface, because at a lower ionic strength, the concentration of the sodium ion is low, so a higher fraction of the cesium is adsorbed to the solid surface. However, when we increase the influent ionic strength, a higher sodium ion is available in the solution, and they compete with the cesium for the solid surface. That is why we have more cesium in the solution phase, and we have a higher fraction of the cesium that are mobilized in the dissolved form. Okay, so here I want to summarize the findings and the implications from this study. First, from the colloid mobilization and the transport result, we can see that colloid mobilization rates during the steady flow are negligible. But when there is flow transient, that is, when there is a moving drying front, or when there is a moving wetting front, high concentrations of colloid can be mobilized from unsaturated medium. And those two results implies that rainfall frequency, instead of the duration of the steady state of rainfall, controls the amount of colloid that can be mobilized from the widow's zone, because during the steady state of rainfall, there is no soil moisture content change. So the mobilization rate of cesium is expected to be low. However, when we have a very frequent rainfall, there is always change in the soil moisture content at the beginning and at the termination of the rainfall. So we expect that there will be high concentration and high amount of colloids that can be mobilized during frequent rainfall. In addition, we also found that colloid mobilization is sensitive to influent ionic strength. This is due to the changes in the electrical double layer forces. And this has some implications with regard to the quantity of colloids mobilized during rainfall or landfill leach and infiltration. We know that rainwater is low in ionic strength. So when there is a rainfall, we expect that there is a high concentration of colloids can be mobilized in the widow's zone. However, landfill leachants, they contain high salt concentration, and when the landfill leachant infiltrate the widow's zone, we expect that there is very limited amount of colloids can be mobilized. From the result of the colloid-facilitated cesium transport, we can see that the Hanford colloids are capable of binding cesium, and the mobilized colloids, they are capable of facilitating the cesium transport during both drainage and imbibition. This colloid effect, the colloid-facilitated transport on cesium is also sensitive to infant ionic strength. There are two reasons for this. First is because the mobility of the colloids, they are sensitive to the ionic strength. At low ionic strength, the mobility is high. So a higher quantity of colloids and the colloids, the associated cesium are mobilized. However, when we increase the infant ionic strength, the mobility of the colloids becomes lower. And also because of the competition of sodium ions for solid surface, a higher fraction of the cesium is in the dissolved form. So these are the two reasons for the sensitivity of the colloid effect on colloid facilitated cesium transport. And finally, this implies that for rainfall and underground storage tank leakage at Hanford site, they should have different effects on colloid facilitated transport. Because again, rainfall is low in ionic strength. So when there is a rainfall event, we expect high concentrations of cesium, high concentration of colloids and colloid associated cesium will be mobilized. However, when there is a leakage in the underground storage tank, because we know that the waste in those tanks contain high salt concentration, when they leak and when those liquid waste infiltrate the widow's stone sediment, because of the high concentration, we expect that there will be very low degree of colloid and colloid mobilization. However, because of the high ionic strength of those wastes, we expect that they will be able to compete for they will be able to mobilize the cesium in dissolved form. And finally, I would like to thank the U.S. Department for funding for providing funds for this work. And also, I would like to thank those people for providing the Hanford course and other sentiment materials. Thank you for your attention.
Question?
Just now you mentioned two different fractions of cesium. One, the first one is the colloids associated with and the other one is the dissolved form.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question about how do you separate these two different forms and how do you
It's like that. We do not have direct measurement on colloid associated cesium. What I measured is the total cesium. That is, I took a sample, well shake it, and took the suspension to measure the total cesium concentration. Because in the measurement, we use liquid scintillation counter to count the cesium concentration, and this measurement is not affected by the presence of the colloids. And to measure the dissolved cesium, I used a membrane filter to filtrate those suspension. Only the dissolved phase will be able to pass that membrane filter, and I counted the filtrate of that, and that is the dissolved cesium concentration.
What is the size of the
I used 0.2 micron. The background. Oh, actually, here, I said I used cesium contaminated sand to pack my column, but initially there is no cesium in that sand. I pre-treat that sand, and then they have cesium in.
Okay, well,
right now, we didn't test at other pH, but expect there should be an effect.
Thank you again.
Okay.
Thank you.